Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. This Saturday, April 13th, acclaimed jazz pianist Brad Meldow and singer mandolin virtuoso Chris Thiele will perform as a duo at the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. It'll be a rare and special evening with two of America's most groundbreaking young musicians. Chris Thiele began playing mandolin when he was 5 years old. A very quick synopsis of his musical life from then until now includes playing with Grammy Award-winning trio Nickel Creek, releasing several solo albums, co-founding the progressive bluegrass quintet Punch Brothers, and recording the Goat Rodeo sessions with Yo-Yo Ma, Stuart Duncan, and Edgar Meyer. Chris Thiele, 2012 MacArthur Genius, joins us now. Chris Thiele, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So let's begin with the matter at hand. You're playing with Brad Meldow at the Mehewi in Great Barrington. How did you meet Brad, and when did you two decide to collaborate?
I met Brad, actually, backstage after one of the very early shows with the band that would become Punch Brothers at the Bowery Ballroom in New York City. And thank God no one told me he was coming, because I'm not sure I could have made it on stage. I've been a huge Brad Meldow fan since I was 18, so I guess 14 years. I guess that would have been about 7 years ago. And when I saw him back there, I mean, I freaked out. I instantly thought of, like, okay, wait, how did the show go? How did I play okay? Oh, God, I don't even remember. You know, and just, you know, freaking out, like meeting the president or something. But he seemed to have enjoyed himself, and we talked about trying to do something together at some point. And eventually we did this night. It was a benefit concert. We both did a solo show. We didn't play together at all, but it was like another, you know, me just getting to sit right in front and soak up his musicianship and then be all inspired to do my thing afterwards. And he stuck around, and we got more serious about doing something after that. Eventually, it sort of culminated in this duo show at Wigmore Hall in London, this beautiful little kind of a chamber music-oriented hall. And we did about an hour and a half there, and it was one of the most exciting musical experiences I've ever had. It's about as present as I can ever remember being in life up to this point. Just for how explosively spontaneous but structurally rigorous his improvisation is. It's a joy to interact with him musically. I feel really fortunate to be in a position where we can do this tour together.
As he is, you know, primarily an improviser, how do you prepare for the show you're doing at the Mehewi, or that show that you did in England? How do you get ready for it? How much time do you spend together playing before you take the stage?
I think you'll find that most great improvisers are also good planners. I actually feel that improvisation is composition at a breakneck pace, and that composition should actually be like improvisation at a very leisurely pace. It irks me a little bit that I think a lot of musicians kind of separate the disciplines in their minds and kind of work themselves into a state for both for both endeavors, when I think there's a pretty natural way that each activity can unfold that really is pretty similar. Brad and I have been emailing back and forth with song ideas, you know, the material that we both love that we're excited to try and play together. You're always looking for a piece of music that you love, but that you can also see shedding some light on, or at least shedding some new light on. You know, presenting, like, I've always heard this song and wondered, you know, why it didn't do this, and all of a sudden you can do that if you're playing it yourself. And so I think we're looking for material like that, where we love it but can also see having a unique perspective on what makes that song that song. And we're also we're trying to get some new material up and running, and then we've also picked out each of us kind of picked out some of the other guys' material that we like to do together and kind of, you know, work up new versions of. It's a pretty organic collaboration. It'll be fun to see how the material develops, like, night in, night out, based on where we're playing and who comes. And I think that's one of the best parts of live music, is that ideally the individuals that, you know, make up the audience end up becoming sort of band members, that they have a substantial impact on the evening of music, in a way that obviously you can't have on recorded music that you're listening to. I look forward to that.
I've spoken with a fair number of musicians who started maybe not quite as young as you did, but pretty young, and started with one instrument or discipline and then switched a bunch of times, and what they're known for is something else. But you started with the mandolin and have pretty much stuck with it. What is it about the mandolin that is so special and expressive for you that you've kept it your instrument your whole career?
Well, the funny thing is I'm actually sort of constantly frustrated by the mandolin, what I perceive to be the mandolin's limitations. Uh-huh. You know, and I'm always kind of railing against them. And you know, the way that a lot of people don't actually love their speaking voices.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, particularly when they hear them back. I mean, I think I feel that way about the mandolin, but I feel like I also had, at the end of the day, it was me playing the mandolin was just sort of like, you know, I didn't choose my speaking voice either. It's just what I have to work with, or you know, my singing voice, what I sound like singing. I went straight forward as a little kid and never looked back. You know, once I started playing it, it was my voice, and you know, I can't trade my voice back in for someone else's,
right.
Much as I would like to at times. And I feel the same way about the mandolin. It's what I do. It's what I know. It's my voice. And so I'm constantly looking for ways to improve my, you know, my instrumental voice's ability to express my musical hopes and dreams. And you know, it does fine. I'm okay with it. Sometimes I wish I played the piano. Sometimes I wish I played the violin. Those are two instruments that I just think are, those are the two instruments that I think are kind of the most extraordinary in terms of range of expression or expressive dynamic or something like that. But yeah, so my mandolin is like my voice, and I'm not actually that fond of it, but it's just what I have to work with.
Last year, you, as you know, were awarded a MacArthur Genius Grant, and I saw you on, I guess, yeah, it must have been Charlie Rose with Juno Diaz, talking about how one of the opportunities it would afford you, literally afford you, would be to be able to say no more often. Have you been able to say no more often than the last handful of months here?
It just seems like there's always more things to say no to and more things to say yes to.
Right.
More things that you just couldn't imagine not saying yes to. But I'm really trying to continue to say yes to time on the couch with the aforementioned instrument such as it is.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing it. I have some more time at home this year. I think I'm always going to be... I love to perform. I really do. I love to perform, and I never feel like the creative process is complete until I go out and like show it to someone. See, I feel like when I perform a piece, I get to experience it. I can put myself in the audience's shoes and experience it for the first time, or I can get closer to that. That's actually when I feel like I'm playing my best, is when I'm almost, you know, hovering. That the real me is actually not playing and singing, it's and performing. It's like out in the audience somewhere, like getting to watch.
Uh-huh.
That's my favorite. And that's one of the reasons the collaboration is so important. You're more able to get out of yourself and just enjoy music. It's easier to do that with another person, but I'll always be. And that's, you know, that's part of how the schedule gets so full so quick. Is there's just so many wonderful musicians in the world that I want to work with. And I learned so much, and it's just a matter of having that in balance. You know, you got to have time to implement the things you learn, and that's what the couch time is for. And I've got a little of that going on right now, which is fun. In fact, when we get off the phone, I'm going to try and finish this little piece for Brad.
You will be back in the Berkshires this summer. In August, you'll be at Tanglewood with the Goat Rodeo Sessions. Could you tell us a little bit about how that project came together?
Yeah, Edgar has been working with Yo-Yo on and off for years and years and years. They had the Appalachian Waltz project,
right,
with Mark O'Connor. At a certain point, Edgar told Yo-Yo about me and suggested that we work together. And Yo-Yo brought it up for his for the holiday record. He made the Songs of Joy and Peace, and we had so much fun playing music and just hanging out,
mm-hmm.
just talking about life and, you know, living and playing music. And it was such a fun experience for all three of us that we just continued to kick around the idea of collaborating more extensively. And I thought of Stuart Duncan as being a fun fourth voice to add to the conversation, and everyone was into it, and so we started working on it. It was such a beautifully layered process of getting together, hanging out, getting comfortable with each other as human beings, getting comfortable with each other as musicians, you know, from admittedly fairly disparate backgrounds, but with lots of common goals and I feel like compatible musical dispositions. It was so fun getting the recording music played together, and when we worked it back up for the show that we did at the House of Blues in Boston, where that was just kind of televised in movie theaters or something. It was really, really, again, so fun, and we knew we needed to actually take it on the road and do. I can't wait to actually perform that material live in front of audiences, you know, for a couple of weeks. So I think it's going to be.
I apologize for not knowing this without asking, but have you ever been to Tanglewood before?
I have. Okay. Twice. Once, I think just twice. Once, a long time ago, my old band, Nickel Creek, opened for Lyle Lovett at Tanglewood. And then I've played Tanglewood as a sideman for the Prairie Home Companion show.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's so fun. So fun. I love that space. Obviously, the history of the place is kind of breathtaking. The things that have gone down at Tanglewood. Mm-hmm. Also, the Berkshires are becoming really. You know, we recorded the Goat Rodeo sessions in the Berkshires at James Taylor's studio at his home there, and we I think the place is so relaxing. It's so focusing. And I just made a Bach record out there at the same studio and got to stay at the Blantyre Hotel, which is beautiful, beautiful. We would get done with the session and put on suits and go to dinner. It was so fun.
Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. It's been a real treat.
Oh, the pleasure is mine, and I can't wait to get out there with y'all. It'll be fun.
Chris Thiele will perform with Brad Meldow at the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, this Saturday, April 13th at 8 p.m. To learn more, visit themehewi.org. That's the, MAHAIWE.org. Chris will be at Tanglewood with the Goat Rodeo Sessions on August 15th. For more information on that concert, visit tanglewood.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.